Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Q2 FY26 earnings conference call of Haikel Limited. This conference call may contain forward-looking statements about the company, which are based on beliefs, opinions, and expectations of the company as on the date of this call. These statements are not guarantees of future performance and involve risks and uncertainties that are difficult to predict. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during this conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Sameer Hiremath, Vice Chairman and Managing Director from Haikel Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon and a warm welcome to all of you. We extend our gratitude to all of you for participating in our Q2 and H1 FY26 results conference call. We are pleased to provide you with an update on the progress made by our company. We trust you have had the opportunity to review our comprehensive earnings release, investor presentation, and the financial statements for the quarter and half-year ended 30th September 2025. These documents can be accessed on both Haikel's website and the stock exchange's websites. I am Sameer Hiremath, Vice Chairman and Managing Director, Haikel Limited, and I will be taking you through the discussion and presenting the financial results. On this call with me, I have Anish Swadhi, our Senior President and Head of Business Transformation and Animal Health, Kuldip Jain, our Chief Financial Officer, Manoj Malhotra, our President and Head of the Pharmaceutical Business, Strategic Growth Advisors, our Investor Relations Advisors. Talking about our Q2 FY26 performance, if you look at the end market, the global chemical and life sciences industry is showing signs of a measured recovery. Demand visibility seems to be improving quarter by quarter, and plant utilization across key geographies is gradually strengthening. At the same time, structural overcapacity, especially in the crop protection business in certain regions, continues to weigh on pricing and evolving trade policies, adding volatility to procurement cycles and supply chains due to the uncertainties. Despite the external challenges, Haikel's diversified portfolio and long-standing customer relationships provide us with the resilience to navigate near-term uncertainty. The consolidated revenue for the quarter two FY26 stood at 319 crores with an EBITDA of 8 crores. We were able to maintain operational stability despite financials being affected by a short-term deferral of sales in our pharmaceutical business. Sales of certain orders executed towards the end of Q2 were booked in October 2025. This resulted in under-absorption of fixed costs during the quarter. For H1 FY26, the revenue stood at 699 crores for the company with an EBITDA of 32 crores. While the first half has been impacted in our pharmaceutical business due to regulatory developments, the underlying fundamentals of both our businesses remain strong. Despite the challenges faced in the first half of this year, we expect a strong recovery in Q3 and Q4, as mentioned in our last conference call. Supported by improved demand visibility, higher capacity utilization, and the commercialization of new products which are being ramped up as we speak, the pharmaceutical business revenue for the quarter stood at 190 crores with an EBIT margin of -9.2%. As you know, the Bangalore facility of Haikel received an OAI status earlier this year in May, followed by a warning letter in August 2025. This has delayed temporarily the offtake across both our generics and our CDMO businesses as customers conducted their own internal risk assessment. We have responded to these risk assessments with urgency and discipline, which have now been completed. Two global remediation partners who have been onboarded by our company are now working alongside us to strengthen our internal quality systems to ensure our corrective actions meet the highest global standards. Our CAPA implementation is well advanced, and we remain in active dialogue with the U.S. FDA. These steps are not only addressing the observations but also reinforcing our systems for the long term. Importantly, we are seeing continued engagement from our customers, with all orders given at the beginning of the year intact and none of the customers canceling any of our businesses. We are progressing now well through resumptions of supply, which has begun from October 2026. During the quarter, we have witnessed significant traction from key global innovators for strengthening future pipeline of complex chemistry molecules, and we're getting several RFPs from new customers and existing customers as well. We have also received positive traction from several global companies, from innovator companies, for the CDMO business who have visited us in the last quarter, demonstrating our enhanced capabilities as we have progressed well towards strengthening our business relationships further. This will support enhancing a higher margin revenue in the mid to long term and strategically position us in the niche CDMO segments. During the quarter, our crop protection segment revenue recorded sales of 129 crores with an EBIT of minus 10 crores. The margins remained under pressure due to ongoing pricing challenges stemming from oversupply in the global market. However, volumes have started to recover in the crop division. In our CDMO business, the financial performance remains muted as innovator customers are undergoing business segment restructuring and destocking of supply chain, which is almost completed. They also, we see on the customer angle, there's a strategic shift towards next generation molecules and platforms. This presents a long-term opportunity for us for differential partnerships and co-development programs, of which we have begun doing a few in the last 6 months. To capitalize on these opportunities, we are augmenting our capabilities and increasing our prioritizing innovation through our portfolio realignment. In the near term, we anticipate a gradual recovery in the second half of this year for the crop division, with stable performance expected on a full year basis, which is similar to last year. Beyond the crop protection business, we are also making steady progress in our specialty chemicals business, specifically the personal care division, with a broader diversification strategy. We are expanding our collaboration with global customers and on personal care ingredients, and we expect to commercialize 2 to 3 products in the second half of this financial year and ramp up the volumes in the next financial year. This segment continues to emerge as a growth driver, and we are committed to building a differentiated portfolio that aligns with evolving consumer preferences and global regulatory standards. During the Q2, we also inaugurated a state-of-the-art high-potency laboratory, enhancing our capabilities in high-potency molecule development. We also commissioned a new kilo lab and a specialty chemical site, strengthening our early-stage development and scale-up infrastructure. These investments reflect our commitment to innovation, technology, and long-term growth. We reaffirm the recovery in H2 FY26, as mentioned in the last conference call, to cover the deferment gap from H1 FY26 while sustaining demand of second half of the year. We remain committed to structural strengthening of our compliance systems, diversifying our portfolio, and building a long-term partnerships with global customer base. Now I'll hand over to Kuldeep, who will provide an overview of the financial performance.
Thank you, Sameer, and good evening, everybody. Let me now take you through the financial performance cycle for Q2 and H1 FY2026 and share key updates on our financial trajectory, capital allocation priorities, and balancing strength. For quarter 2 FY2026, our consolidated revenue stood at 319 crore, EBITDA for the quarter stood at ₹8 crore, translating to a margin of 2.6%. Lower than expected sales have resulted in under absorption of fixed costs during the quarter. For the half year FY2026, consolidated revenue reached 699 crore and EBITDA for the same period was ₹32 crore with a margin of 4.6%. Finance cost for the quarter 2 FY2026 was at ₹15 crore, which is a reduction of 13% and 20% on a YO basis. Depreciation remained in line with last quarter. Capital expenditure during the first half year stood at ₹65 crore, focused on debottlenecking, regulatory upgrades, and expanding CDMO capacities. We are maintaining our full year capex guidance of ₹200 crore with a continued emphasis on disciplined capital allocations toward high ROI projects aligned with our long-term growth strategy. Our balance sheet remains healthy with an improved debt equity ratio of 0.55 versus 0.59 at the start of the year. driven by the improved debt profile and repayment during the first half of the year. Now, I would like to hand over to Manoj, who will provide an overview on the pharmaceutical division performance. Manoj, over to you.
Thank you, Kuldeep, and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Let me now walk you through the performance of our pharmaceutical business. In Q2 FY26, our pharmaceutical segment recorded a revenue of rupees 190 crore and EBIT of rupees minus 17 crore. There have been disruptions in customer offtake patterns which were influenced by the recent US FDA official action indicated status at a Bangalore facility, followed by warning letter in August 25. Most customers have completed their risk assessment and we have resumed deliveries which will ramp up in significantly in H2 FY26. Following the US FDA inspection, our Bangalore facility received an OAI classification and a subsequent warning letter dated August 22nd. We are actively addressing these observations through a structured time-bound remediation program. In collaboration with global CGMP consultants, they are implementing corrective and preventive actions that align with international regulatory standards. The remediation plan is on track for completion by December 2025. Our API business continued to penetrate across key markets, supported by established portfolio and expanding market share in select molecules. This has further reduced our dependence on regulated markets and improved our resilience, navigating through volatility in trade policies and uncertainties driven by US tariffs. Our development pipelines remain robust with 8 to 9 molecules currently under development are progressing well. We are on course to launch 2 to 3 new products annually, consistent with our medium-term strategy. As part of our risk mitigation efforts, we are progressing towards dual-side validation for all critical APIs. In our CDMO business, the business continues to benefit from the structural momentum driven by positive global outsourcing landscape. We are observing a sharp uptake in early-stage RFPs, particularly in high-value small molecule and advanced intermediates. This demand is being driven by global innovators and emerging biotech firms who are looking to diversify their development and manufacturing away from single region dependencies. While commercial scale-up timelines remain staggered, the quality and volume of engagements have significantly improved. Several projects are now transitioning from early development to pilot scale. In the food and nutraceutical ingredient space, we are on track to scale operations and expect to reach peak output within the next 18 to 24 months. Our portfolio expansion efforts in this segment are progressing well. Additionally, key starting materials produced for global innovators have advanced into phase 3 clinical trials with commercial launch anticipated in FY27. To support this momentum, we are investing in pilot scale capacity enhancement at our R&D center in Pune. We have also inaugurated a new high-potent active pharma ingredient lab, which enables us to enter the rapidly growing segments such as oncology API market. Our R&D is now fully equipped to offer a broader suite of services to our innovator partners. Looking ahead, we expect API volumes to improve, supported by regulatory approvals across geographies and deeper penetration into semi-regulated markets. In CDMO segment, the pipeline is strong and diversified, with increasing engagement in both volume and technical complexity. Our near-term focus is to resolve outstanding points with the US FDA and restore full compliance. Over the medium to long term, we remain focused on developing new APIs for global markets and converting CDMO opportunities into sustainable business growth. Now, I would hand over to Anish, who will provide an overview of our business strategy.
Thanks, Manoj. First, I'd like to discuss the animal health business. We are seeing continued progress in our animal health business. Most molecules under the long-term supply agreement are now being delivered at small commercial volumes as registrations have started to come through across global markets. At the same time, I am pleased to tell you that we have been awarded new development contracts for 2 molecules from global innovators. Additionally, we have submitted proposals for 2 new RFPs from different global innovators for their on-patent proprietary products. Our recent enhancement in the technology platform with HP API capabilities on the pharmaceutical business will also enable us to further diversify our offerings in the animal health and enter into niche segments. We have built a strong, long-lasting partnerships with innovators across the US and Europe and are increasingly positioned as more than just a manufacturing partner. We are now being recognized for our diverse innovation, complex synthesis capabilities, regulatory compliance and agility. We are also expanding into Tier 2 innovators, biotech customers and our own product portfolio selling into key geographies, which will further diversify and strengthen the animal health division as a long-term growth driver. Now I would like to open the floor to Q&A.
Thank you very much. We will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Henil Bagadia from Equicorp. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity, sir. Sir, I've got a few questions. So on the pharma and crop care both sides, so a large part of our revenue actually does come from the legacy and old molecules, which have got a very low margins. So as investors, how should we look at the mix? What is the mix right now between the legacy and the new molecules that you've launched in the last 3-4 years, which do enjoy healthy margins? And how should we see the mix in FY27, FY28 as the projects start actually picking up? Hello?
Yeah, so if you look at our total margin profile, the mix between CDMO and own, and I would categorize CDMO to be obviously higher margin business. So our current CDMO business is about 50% of our revenue today, and our own business also close to 50%. In that 50% of the own molecule, which is our generic API business, we have a few commodity low margin products, but we have a market leadership and volumes based business. So that covers our fixed cost to a very large extent with volume. That's a volume play. But we're launching several new generic APIs, which is in the new generation in the anti-diabetic portfolio, which have started to come into play from next year onwards as they go off patent. And those will be a higher margin generic play. So even though we have generics, there'll be a segmentation between the generic plays. We have 2-3 molecules which have medium to low margins. I would not say very low margins, they're still reasonable margins, because if you look at the fixed cost required is very low for this product, because already the plants are fully depreciated and we're running at very high throughput for those molecules. So the EBITDA on those products, even though the contribution margin may be low, the EBITDA on those commodity products is pretty reasonable. On the other hand, the generic new portfolio which is being launched, and we've got many products being launched every year, we are seeing that the new generics will contribute to almost 50% of our revenue going forward. And while legacy will remain between 40 to 45% of our business. The CDMO business, which is where we're very excited about, which has now become almost 50% of our total business, is in the ramp-up mode. Products which are in the development have moved into validation, as Anish mentioned and Manoj mentioned. We have 8 to 9 exciting projects in the different stages of ramp-up. And these will start driving up revenues and significant margin upticks in the pharmaceutical division in the next 2 to 3 years.
Okay. So just one clarification. There are some legacy molecules like gabapentin, pregabalin, or gemfibrozil or pentoxifilin where we've got a very good share. So there, as the new generics starts to ramp up in utilization, we'll reduce the volumes here, right? And if the plants are fungible, probably with some debottlenecking and some reactor additions, etc., we can probably shift most of own products to the new ones, right? If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, see, gabapentin is where we have global market leadership. And it is still growing globally at 3 to 5% on a global basis. Being a market leader, we are not giving up that volume growth, but we're reprioritizing our customer mix to cater to the higher margin customers.
So from the same aspect, we're relooking at our product mix. If we produce the same amount of tonnage of GABA year on year, the absolute margin from gabapentin will start improving. That's been our focus on products like gabapentin and pregabalin and pentoxifilin. There is no fresh capex being done on that. The plants are old, they're depreciated. So even though, as I'm repeating myself, the EBITDA is pretty reasonable and we're getting a very large market share in those products and we're able to retain a presence in this. And this helps us enter into many new customers and makes a hook and an anchor to enter a customer with this, having this fully backward integrated approach on these key molecules.
Okay. So on the new product that you said, which is mainly towards diabetes, so I have two questions out there. So if we see the two products that is in the DPP-4 category, which is the vilagliptin and the sitagliptin part, so there have been reports where we say once the GLP goes off patent, there will be a lot of supplies and it will probably cannibalize a huge part of the sales. And this DPP-4 used to be about $15-20 billion earlier, but right now, I mean, it's shrinking. The market is not growing, and as GLP goes off patent, it's subject to erosion on both price and market share level. So here, how do you see the opportunity as this is one of the products in our pipeline? And on the other side, we've got good products on the SGLT2 inhibitor side, which is DAPA, CANA, EMPA, and A2-glucosamine. So there, it's got a niche on the cardio and the renal side because of which it can be used as a combi drug with the GLP-1s. So here, the market growth was expected to be around 7-8%, but people are saying it's expected to even overshoot as the GLP goes off patent in terms of the combi usage. So how do you see things on both sides as both the things are in our pipeline?
Sure, I'll let Manoj, maybe you can answer that, take that question.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good analysis. So we have both kind of molecules, starting with sitagliptin. We are also into the new generation molecules like EMPA, DAPA, CANA-glucosamine. So we believe that being in all segments of the all kind of treatment therapies for anti-diabetic and all kind of technologies, this will really help us to ramp up this business. So we're getting ready for the future. Yes, Sita, we have already there. DAPA, EMPA, we are already there. We have a DMF. We already have customer seeding. What atiglifosin has not taken off as much as DAPA and EMPA, but going forward, we believe we'll have DAPA glifosin, EMPA, and CANA glifosin. We are strongly positioned in all these three anti-diabetic, more because of the building block from a chemical side is common in all of them. And our portfolio approach for anti-diabetic therapy will really help us in gaining further market share in the global market.
Okay. So on the oral anticoagulant side, we've got a product called Epaxabin. So Pfizer, as which Pfizer and BSF have jointly developed it. So in the recent government action, Pfizer has just reduced the price by 40%. So how does that impact the market as such? Because it's due for off-patent in 2028. So do you see the CDMO inquiries coming in very hot? Because as they've reduced the price, they actually need it at low cost and they can outsource it from low-cost geographies like us.
No, I don't.
And, but at the same time, there are also trade barriers. So, I mean, how do we see the situation?
No, we have two molecules in that category. One is Apixaban and Rivaroxaban.
Apixaban and Rivaroxaban.
We have both DMF filed in these two categories, in these two products. So we see good customer seedings out there. Yes, innovator, it takes time to get into the innovators, although we are in touch with them for the key starting materials. But as the pricing pressure comes on these innovators, they start looking for a generic version. That, in a way, we cannot really predict. But we have to wait for the right time and be in touch with them. As and when they decide to go for a generic version, we are there in front of them to position ourselves.
So, but can Apixaban be a star product for us? Because it's just an $8-10 million product just right now before it's off patent.
Yes, the API dosage is small here as compared to sitagliptin and some other anti-diabetics from an API perspective. But overall, the value will be high in my view. And coming to this innovator business, we have that gabapentin case study where we started supplying to the innovator right in somewhere around 2007, 2008, where we had a better process and better cost than the innovator, and they came to us. Similarly, in GM5, it happened. So those opportunities do come, and we are rightly positioned that we will get into these opportunities as and when they come.
So lastly, before I get into the queue, Hycal has been very strong in a lot of process chemistries. I mean, we've got amoxidation, fluorine chemistry, bridge chemistry, and a few other, which just a handful of few CDMO players have globally. And I mean, we are one of the few who have all the processes, like the line to the likes of Lonza or probably Sigfried. So what is preventing us from getting all these high value orders or high potent molecules? Are we late in the race? How do we understand? Because even a lot of Indian peers, much larger than us, who just have one or two chemistry specialized in that, they've got very, very large orders in last 1.5-2 years. But I mean, for us, it's being in the commentary for the last 2-3 years, but I mean, it's not converting into very, very large orders. So how should we actually see the situation? Is it that they have taken some large molecule orders, which is why enough opportunity is not left on the table, or how do we actually see the situation?
So we are in touch with various innovators and they are in the pipeline of development. The only issue is that there is a lead time for regulatory filing, which is delaying this commercial launches. And as we mentioned in our commentary earlier, that we have a few KSMs which will go into commercialization by 27 onwards.
Okay.
And ultimately, the patent also has to expire.
Okay. So lastly, also, if I could squeeze in one, will the current OAI or the warning letter have impact on any of the DMF filings or future filings we do with the US FDA?
No, yes, you can file DMF, but you may not get approval till the OAI is lifted. So what we are doing, we are filing DMFs now from the Panoli side as well, because we know this will take some time. Maybe we can have the re-inspection of USFDA sometime in the middle of 2026 or early 2026. But there are always uncertainties. And that is the reason we have developed Panoli site. Panoli site is approved by USFDA for APIs, and which we passed successfully in May of 2023. So we'll have two sites now for API filing. Number one, Bangalore. Number two, Panoli. We're also expanding our Pune site more for high potent API manufacturing, as well as having a pilot plant there. So in the long term, we'll get more and more de-risking of various sites so that this kind of situation can be handled.
So since you said high potent API, are we...
Sorry to interrupt, sir, but I may request you to rejoin the question queue for follow-up questions. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to answer all the questions from the participants, please restrict your questions to 2 per participant. The next question is from the line of Dhaval Shah from Girik Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity. I would like to understand regarding the footnote which talks about this 80 crore revenue. So was there some accounting change during the quarter which we were not aware of, or... So I'm seeing this for the first time in a pharma company, that during the quarter the auditor doesn't allow this revenue to be recognized. Can you just elaborate on this?
Yeah, see, basically the sales, because of the FDA issue, that many of the orders that were in the system, the sales took place towards the end of September. But the customer had asked us to hold on till the risk assessment was completed. So that resulted in the sales getting spilled over to the first week of October. Because of that, they had to be reversed into the September numbers. All the reversals were taken in September. And all the sales subsequently happened in the first few weeks of October and have been completed.
Okay, so this, so all of these were related to the pharma division. So it's only the September. So it's the entire full quarter sales, right? Which would have happened, or
not
the only
September sales, end of September sales.
Only end of September. Okay. Understood. And you mentioned that none of the orders are cancelled after the warning letter received, right? So did I understand correctly?
That's correct. I mentioned that in the last call as well, and I reaffirmed that not a single customer has cancelled the orders. There's only been a deferment in the offtake. None of the POs that were in the system have been cancelled as well. They just asked us to pause. They relooked at the risk assessment again in September post the warning letter, and they said, okay, now we are satisfied, and from October onwards the shipments have restarted. No, not a single cancellation.
Okay.
Okay, got it. And in the last the previous question, we mentioned about the re-inspection. So it's been now what, 7-8 months, right, since the time the OAI has been received. So what is the, so how do we understand, what is this, what is the next line of action, you know, now the USFDA has to take, you know, to remove, because the customers are not cancelling the order, and in certain molecules we are important in the global supply chain. So even the customer would be trying to, you know, help us and talk to USFDA. So where are we in this, and where do you see at the earliest, you know, we can get a this warning letter removed?
Manoj, you can take it.
Yeah, see, the warning letter was received in August 22nd. Usually, they wait for 6 months, and they give you 6 months to complete all your CAPAs. We have given them a response of the warning letter in September 11. Then we gave them one more update in end of October. So we'll keep giving them update every month to kind of give them a progress on our CAPAs. But before 6 months, they really don't talk to you much, because it's assumed that you'll take 6 months to rectify the situation and ensure that CAPAs are implemented effectively. So I think February is the right time to really approach them. And then if they believe that we are ready and we are able to convince them, then they come for a re-inspection. So we'll expect in maybe March, April, May, they should come for a re-inspection.
Okay, so the peak revenues in high, in pharma division, what you've done in the past, so when, so should we expect that by June quarter or September quarter next year, we should be back at those numbers or crossing those numbers?
So the warning letter actually does not bar you from your existing business. So the existing mature approved products will continue now. Yes, there was a delay in September, which we explained, because the customers do their risk assessment post their warning letter. So the volume will come back in H2 for the mature product. The new product, yes, that they will kind of come in after the re-inspection. But we see a strong recovery in H2, because all these mature products which we already have purchase orders, they will be executed now in Q3 and Q4. So on an annual basis, there will be no impact. And once we clear the inspection, then the new product sales will also start. But that's only for the U.S., which is 35 to 40% of our business. All other markets, the business continues as usual. Food product business continues as usual. It is only those specific, a few molecules, which we thought we launch early from for our U.S. customer, those will be impacted for some time. Just to clarify, the mature business continues to U.S. and all over the world. New products continue to get approved in Europe, LATAM, and other markets. Food business continues to go as usual.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Shravan Vora from Premier Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good evening to the management. Thanks for the opportunity. I just wanted to understand, get some sense on this deferral that we've had. What was the nature? I know you clarified to the previous participant, but just any more details that you can share, because it's a large number of 80 plus crores.
So basically, this is what I just mentioned to the previous participant when my answer is the same, that this, because of the customers asking us to do the risk evaluation, even though the orders on the system may be asked to ship, they'll be asked to hold the material, and the material got delayed by a week or so in shipment. It went into the first week of October. So we took a decision to reverse these sales, because because of the accounting technicalities, and they've been accounted already from the October sales. They've all come into October sales now.
Okay. Got it. And previous quarter, we had spoken about, and you mentioned in this press release also, that we'll make up for the revenue loss in 1H in second half. Previous quarter, we had reiterated in our press release our outlook of like a double-digit growth in pharma for the year while crop being flat. So do you think we can hold that guidance for F26?
We are still hoping to get to those guidance numbers. We are working towards that target still, yeah.
Okay.
See, Q2 was only got deferred into October. What was said in the past, that is, so that's only change of 1 month or 15 days of deferral of sales. There's no other long-term impact on this.
No, I understand that. Why I asked that was because in a full year, double-digit pharma, so first half, we've had no growth in 1Q also. So the ask rate becomes higher. So that's why I just wanted to clarify the guidance, because that's what we mentioned in the 1Q press release. Finally, anything you can highlight on the animal health side? F27, we expected to ramp up in terms of revenue. Anything, any progress other than what Mr. Swadi shared in his opening comments?
There's nothing else to add. I mean, the success of the validations. We're now supplying the pre-commercial quantities. We are waiting for all the registrations to happen, so those pre-commercial go into full commercial, and that should happen over the next one or two quarters. So that's positive. As I mentioned also is that we have been awarded two new development contracts, which will go through the development process. These are for global innovators as well. So that's a success that we've achieved this past quarter, in addition to which we've also been shortlisted for two new RFPs other than the ones that we've won. So I think that the development pipeline in the animal health business is strong, and we continue to be confident about delivering growth in that segment.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pranay Delia from Panchatra Advisors LLP. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Good evening. I hope that this is the worst of it that we have seen. Two questions quickly, if you may permit. One is that there's an increase in manpower costs. Is that justifiable with this kind of performance? We are seeing a surge in manpower costs rather than a reduction in salary or some kind of an incentive being disallowed to people who are not performing that well.
Well, we have to front load some of the manpower costs because of the new assets that are coming on stream. We are building up new assets in our businesses based on the capex. So that's why some of the front loading of manpower costs has come. And we've onboarded business development people in the global markets, and also on we have added on some additional manpower based on the new technology that we're putting in place in the R&D side. That being said, we've taken an exercise for rationalizing the manpower cost this year, and the initiative is underway. And by end of this year, we will see some optimization of cost in the manpower segment. Just to reiterate, we are looking at this. We are not letting it slip away. It will start loaded, but as we will see some benefits towards the second half of the year. Yeah.
My objective out here, sir, is pretty simply the crop protection has yielded us nothing in the last 5 years, if I would say. If you look at the profit contribution, is next to zero. So I really don't know on what basis we are seeing manpower escalation or whatever in crop protection. Prudently, I would have expected some kind of reduction. That's what I've got to say. I lead more so to you. You are a better judge. But as I reiterated in the past, as shareholders for the past 5 years, I've seen close to, you would say, 60% of our capital, which has been wiped out. Obviously, not a very hunky feeling, but there's not much that I can do. And the disappointment is there. Hopefully, you'll improve. I have a lot of faith on the management and the way you people have worked in the past. But it's just that this just does not seem to be finishing, sir. Every time we hear the phrase long-term and everything, but just doesn't finish, sir. That's ironical. That's about it. Wish you all the best. I will again stay on as a shareholder, hoping that next quarter will be better, but just refuses to be so. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Manoj from Equicorp. Please go ahead.
Hi, Samir. Thanks for the opportunity. Samir, my first question is, post the warning letter, whatever our plans were to introduce new molecules, so what would have been, if you can quantify the impact in the current year as well as if it goes further in the next year, then what could be the total impact on our business or the potential loss that we would see in terms of revenue?
Manoj, you want to take that?
Yes, as I mentioned in to the previous person who asked this question, that firstly the mature products don't get affected. Yes, there's a deferment because of customers do their risk assessment. They have to come here, make sure that their specifications are being met, and we have no chance, no possibility of any kind of batch failure. So, yes, the new products do get affected, but if you really see, say in this FY26. We would not have really lost more than, say, 20-30 crores, which is very minimum if you see our 1,200-1,300 crore business. FY27, yes, the new molecules are there, but we have the option of going them to Panoli. So I don't see much material impact from a sales perspective. Where it really gets affected, yes, we had to take some GMP consultants. There's a fixed cost, I think we mentioned in the last investor call that, yes, 8 to 10 crores gets added in the fixed cost. Because we have to take some US-based GMP consultants who are helping us in the remediation plan. Some investments also we have made in the plan to make them more in line with the FDA requirements and more some shortcomings which were pointed out in the warning letter. And so those investments also we have made. It's not a very big impact, yes, but in terms of management time and resources to make sure you get your compliance back, that really takes a toll. And that is where all the attention is there. We also would like to come back in compliance with the US FDA. And also to say that we have other approvals, like we have approvals in Latin America, in Mexico, in Japan, in all other markets. It's only the US which has this problem.
But if it's a global customer, Is there a possibility that we supply to the European arm and then eventually it goes into the US market? I mean, does that route work or it doesn't work?
No, that won't work. Because ultimately, if it is being consumed in the US and the US FDA does not approve a new ANDA, a new filing, that route will not work. Yeah. We have to be above board on these compliance matters.
My other question is, Samir, in terms of the RFPs, I mean, we have been talking about RFPs for past many quarters, that there have been strong inquiries. And just want to understand, what has been the conversion rate in terms of the test and commercial batches? And is there a possibility, if you can quantify in terms of the amount, I mean, how much you would have won in last at least 12, 18 months, if you can quantify?
Follow your data?
Yes, for the pharma business, our rate is usually between 15 to 20%, the RFP conversion ratio. And we are having many inquiries, but again, the time to convert is actually 6 to 12 months. And as Samir mentioned in the earlier question, that we have increased our BD presence. We have hired one person in the west coast of USA, where she is actually going to many of the smaller, mid-sized and biotech kind of companies. So we are getting good traction. We already have a breakthrough with one customer. A second one is also on the way. And then we have hired a person in Europe who is also meeting several mid-size and large-size customers. I'm sure over a period of time, first of all, the RFP generation or receipt of RFPs will improve. And then we'll expect to improve the conversion ratio from, say, a level of 15 to 20% to 20 to 25%. As we get more familiar with this market and make sure that we stay cost competitive.
Manoj, the question is, not the number of RFPs, right? 15-20% could be the rate. But as investors, we don't know. Is it RFPs for 10 crore, 20 crore, 50 crore, 100 crore, right? I mean, so if you can quantify the total, and I'm not talking about RFP to RFP, but whatever we have won in last 12 to 18 months.
So it's difficult to quantify at this point of time. Maybe we'll provide more details in our investor presentation in the next call. We have seen several inquiries coming from both mid-size and small-size companies. I mentioned one or two of them already, which have been converted. So this year itself, we'll get around $4 to $5 million of development revenue from these customers. going forward, they will scale up. Many of them are in clinical, so we really have to watch out whether they go to the market or not. There is always a rate of failure or rate of success which happens in these markets. But yes, ideally we will provide more details and we will do that.
Another question on the high potential lab that we set up. I mean, when do you see significant revenue coming from that initiative actually? Because, I mean, if you look at one of our competitors, they took them 3 years just to start getting commercial supplies.
Yes.
Right from the development.
So that's right. It will take 2 to 3 years. It will take 2 to 3 years. What we'll get initially is development revenue from the small companies or innovator companies. But going to commercial, it will take 3 years. So that's a cycle of business.
One other question on the pharma itself, Manoj. If you look at our animal health customer, the large contract that we won, they are also a large pharma player. And they have a huge outsourcing from India, and you know the company who has grown significantly on the back of their business. Mm-hmm. Is there a potential for us to break into their pharma business, or we have already broken into it? And if you can throw some light on that.
Maybe Anish, would you like to answer that?
Yeah, sure. No, certainly we looked at that, and we are in active dialogues. The relationship that we've created on the animal health side is well known to the people on the human health side as well, and we're in active discussions with them. So certainly the goal is to extend the success that we've had on one side to the other side.
But something can happen over the next couple of years. I mean, at least some business start.
Yeah, certainly we are hopeful and positive. Yeah.
Yeah. And my last question on Samir, again on the plant that we repurpose, right? So when do you see significant business coming from that plant so that it takes care of the overheads, interest, depreciation, everything?
So the repurposement is currently underway. It will be completed by end of, the phase one will be completed by end of this financial year. Then we move into phase two. Between the repurposement and phases, it's a very large asset, as you know. So it will be done between end of Q4, will be the phase one completion, followed by end of calendar year will be the phase two completion for the entire repurposement. Some revenue will start from next financial year, but the major revenue will start coming in from the FY28 onwards, yeah, when the repurposement is done. It takes about one year to repurpose the plant, yeah.
And this repurposement, I think if I'm not mistaken, you said some part was for the specialty chemical business and some part for some other purpose, right?
Yeah, it's going to become all pharma assets, completely pharma. We're repurposing into pharma fully. So we're seeing a lot of opportunities and inquiries in our pharma business. And also, as Manoj said, we're dual filing now for all products between Jigni and Panoli. So we need to create some capacity in Panoli for our new molecules, which are being filed by this year and next year. So the commercial will be, capacity will be required. So this will be used for that.
All right. And my last comment, I've been an investor in Hycol for more than 12 years now. And I've seen lots of ups and downs and not seen huge returns. I mean, I'm just talking about personal level, right? And I've never seen these two successive quarter of losses. I mean, although we know about it, right? But in last many, many years, because of some different reasons, we have suffered quite a bit, right? And last time I also mentioned, despite that, we have invested whatever 900 plus crore, plus current year 200 plus crore will go, right? So again, the return seems to be from FY28, right? I mean, FY27 would be better than 26, but not a big year. I mean, just wanted to get your sense. I mean, how do you see 27, 28?
No, I think it's the focus right now is to get out of this FDA thing. Compliance inquiries are increasing, RFPs. 27 will be like a transition year, and then 28 we expect to start seeing the growth come back in the business.
Well, thanks a lot, Samir, and all the best. And hope that in a couple of quarters we would see a lot more positive questions on the business and the performance.
Yeah, thank you for it. Thank you for that. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Amish.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Henil Bagadia from Equicorp. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity, sir.
Sir, I have a few questions regarding, so some of our peers have actually started into the specialty chemical side because of seeing the slowdown in the crop chem side. So what was the reason why we've delayed? Because I mean, a lot of our peers have actually got more strong on the specialty chemicals and probably they've reduced the turnover from the crop chem side. So what got us to delay so much?
No, I don't think it was delayed. I think we are, as you know, we have a pharma business which is larger than our crop business. And the focus has been the last few years to invest in the pharma business where we've created and to ramp up the animal health business. So we're rationalizing our crop assets and then we're retooling some of the plants that I mentioned in the previous speaker to make the specialty chemicals. So it's not been a delay. I think we are not making huge investments in spec chem. We're retooling some of the existing assets to launch the spec chem business but with the GMP focus. The pharma focus in specialty chemicals is where we're going to play. We don't want to play in the commodity specialty chemicals business.
In the specialty chemical, are we just seeing the HPC segment or are we seeing other segments? Because there is one chemical which was there on the agrochem side which also has an industrial use. I think so we are also doing that on the spec chem side. It's durian or something. Even a little better margins than crop chem, but again, high single to mid-teens, not some significant thing. So are we seeing some projects which actually gives us a very good niche or probably any other chemistry that we are seeing which can probably help us into this? Because we actually have got a lot of chemistries. We just need to, fix it on certain niche products and try to just get customers there.
Yeah, so I think we are looking at niche chemistry. As I mentioned, we're not doing commodity products. We're looking at this personal care segment for GMP manufacturing. I think that's going to be the differentiator for HiQuil. And we're not trying to do the low-end, low-margin, commodity, large volume. It's niche, medium-volume type of molecules for skincare products.
Okay. So is this a new set of customers or our existing pharma customers will take these kinds of products?
No, they're mostly a new set of customers. They're mostly FMCG, the cosmetic companies that will be our customers. And they've already visited us, samples have been approved, a lot of seeding has happened in the last 6 to 9 months. And now when this plant will be commercialized by end of Q4, the dispatches will start from next financial year to them.
Okay. So if you could also spend some time explaining the high-potent lab that we've just set up. Are we doing something around the biotech side, the peptides, on the fermentation chemistry, where we actually want to go significant on the onco? Because in the coming 5-7 years, decent-sized, large molecule onco products, molecules actually going off patent. So something around there where we actually see some opportunities?
Yeah, so on the high potency lab, we're looking at the anti-cancer drugs to begin with. And we also have some peptide project that we started doing. There is also high potency peptides. Manoj, right? I mean, we're looking at that as well. So that will also be done. But that will be phase two. I think phase one is with the anti-cancer drugs. Not only which are going off patent, but also from a CDMO offering. What we found is that when we're getting the RFPs from our customers, many of the RFPs have a high potency requirement and we could not participate in many of those RFPs, especially on the ADC sides and the PROTAC side. And now with this laboratory, we'll be able to participate in those RFPs. So the win rate which Manoj spoke about can also increase because we'll have a larger basket of RFPs to participate in.
Okay.
And also, so what we've seen, some of the peptides have application in cosmetics and specialty chemicals also. As we are already doing one product there. So overall, our technology offering will increase with this HPAPI lab.
Okay. So peptides and some fermentation chemistry products also have offerings in the fine fragrance and the extremely niche chemical side. So
not fermentation as yet. Not fermentation. But definitely HPAPIs, ADCs, linkers, peptides. That's the way we are going forward.
Okay. So lastly, if we just see HiQuil's story, we never used to be very, very strong in R&D, but we used to be very strong in the manufacturing side in terms of getting our cost in place and getting the chemistry as well as with least amount of impurities. So right now, as we are getting more on the R&D side, are we actually trying to catch the bus that we may have missed where a lot of our peers actually got advantage? Because if you see India as a geography where a lot of pharma customers exit our large peers, they were actually masters in doing the R&D part. So on the CRDMO, they were actually good in the R&D part and the manufacturing was not that strong, but still they were able to convert a large project. For us, manufacturing was strong, but R&D was not that powerful. So with high potent lab as well as new hirings on the R&D side, are we trying to just close the gap so that, we are back in the race with them?
Yeah, I think, I don't think, see, we are not catering to the basic contract research type of discovery. We are focusing on manufacturing-led R&D, which is typically post-phase one, late phase one, early phase two is where we are getting involved in molecules. And so, you know, within a few months, we have to give kilogram quantities. Within 6 months, we have to give tens of kilogram quantities. So some significant amount of revenue can start. And then, you know, it can get launched within 1 to 2 years once you get into the filings. So we're catering to that phase two to launch type of R&D, where our process manufacturing know-how and knowledge comes into play in the R&D. And we've been able to win some very interesting RFPs from global customers in different segments, pharma, human health, animal health, even personal care, which are some very interesting high complex niche products that we're doing. And also on the crop protection side, we're now working on NCEs. So there's a NCE pipeline in Haikal in Pune in the R&D center has changed and has increased substantially in the last 2 to 3 years and will continue to grow with our new offerings, our new laboratories and our capabilities. So the focus will be to get involved earlier in the development with our customers because the business is sticky in nature. Once you get into the filing before launch, the customer will stay with you and naturally progress with you to manufacture, and we have a very strong reputation on the manufacturing side and we can take it all the way to commercial manufacturing. So that's when we moved back a bit from being in the more on the manufacturing side, we moved down back into the R&D scale now in the last few years.
Okay. So, and lastly, if you could also allude and give more understanding when you said on the crop protection side, you are actually focusing on getting on joint development projects with the customers. So how do you actually see this entire story pan out? Because this is a very new thing that we might be doing, or if we are doing it, it's probably on a very small scale. So on the CDMO side, how does this actually pan out for us?
Yeah, so I mean, it is very prevalent in the pharma space. It is quite well known. In the crop protection space, the crop protection companies have now, because of the tremendous cross pressure that our customers are facing, in the past they were outsourcing manufacturing, and India was well known for crop protection CDMO manufacturing. There are some pretty large companies created in the last 10 years. But the R&D was not being outsourced into India. Now we're seeing the similar trend as pharma with the crop companies, that they're also looking at cutting the R&D budgets. So R&D and outsourcing also will increase in the crop protection space. And Haikal will be one of the players catering to the segment.
Okay, okay. Thanks a lot for the clarification, sir, and wish the team all the very best.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will take that as our last question for today. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Sameer Hiremath for closing comments.
Thank you everyone for joining our quarterly and our H1 earnings call and for your continuous interest in our company. We appreciate all the support you have provided to us as we navigate through the challenges of the current global business environment. As we conclude this call, we want to assure you that we are here to address any further questions or concerns. Please feel free to reach out to our investor relations partner, Strategic Growth Advisors. And once again, thank you for your participation. Goodbye and have a very good evening. Thank you.
Thank you. On behalf of Haikal Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us and you may now disconnect your lines.